Over 25 years have passed since the publication of my book, The Manipulated Man, a pamphlet written in great anger against the women's movement's worldwide monopoly of opinion. The determination with which those women portrayed us as victims of men not only seemed humiliating, but also unrealistic. If someone should want to change the destiny of our sex, a wish I had then as I have today, then that someone should attempt to do so with more honesty, and possibly also with a little humor. I would like to take the opportunity presented by the reissue of my book to answer two questions, which I am asked again and again in this context. People often ask me if I would write this book again. Well, I find it right and proper to have done so. But seen from today's perspective, my courage in those days may only be attributable to a lack of imagination. Despite all I wrote, I could not really imagine the power I was up against. It seemed that one is only allowed to criticize women on the quiet, especially as a woman, and could only expect agreement behind closed doors. As we women have, thanks to our relatively stress-free life, a higher life expectancy than men, and consequently make up the majority of voters in Western industrial nations, no politician could afford to offend us. And the media is not interested in discussing the issues involved either. Their products are financed through the advertising of consumer goods, and should we women decide to stop reading a certain newspaper or magazine as its editorial policy displeases us, then the advertisements targeted at us also disappear. After all, it is well established that women make the majority of purchasing decisions. However, I had also underestimated men's fear of reevaluating their position. Yet the more sovereignty they are losing in their professional lives, the more automatic their work, the more controlled by computers they become, the more that increasing unemployment forces them to adopt obsequious behavior towards customers and superiors, then the more they have to be afraid of a recognition of their predicament. And the more essential it becomes to maintain their illusion that it is not they who are the slaves, but those on whose behalf they subject themselves to such an existence. As absurd as it may sound, today's men need feminism much more than their wives do. Feminists are the last ones who still describe men the way they like to see themselves, as egocentric, power-obsessed, ruthless, and without inhibitions when it comes to satisfying their instincts. Therefore, the most aggressive women's libbers find themselves in the strange predicament of doing more to maintain the status quo than anyone else. Without arrogant accusations, the macho man would no longer exist, except perhaps in the movies. If the press stylized men as rapacious wolves, the actual sacrificial lambs of this men's society, men themselves, would no longer flock to the factories so obediently. So I hadn't imagined broadly enough the isolation I would find myself in after writing this book. Nor had I envisaged the consequences which it would have for subsequent writing and even for my private life. Violent threats have not ceased to this date. A woman who defended the arch enemy, who didn't equate domestic life with solitary confinement, and who described the company of young children as pleasure, not as a burden, necessarily had to become a misogynist, even a reactionary and fascist in the eyes of the public. Had not Karl Marx determined once and for all that in an industrial society it is us, the women, who are the most oppressed? It goes without saying, doesn't it, that someone who did not want to take part in the canonization of her own sex is also opposed to equal wages and equal opportunities? In other words, if I had known then what I know today, I probably wouldn't have written this book. And that is precisely the reason why I am so glad to have written it. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the handful of people who have stood up for me and my work. Typically, most of them were women. The second question I am often asked is about the topicality of the opinions I expressed then. To what extent is what I described over 25 years ago still relevant to the new woman and the new man? Here is a list of issues which I recognized in the original book to be men's most significant disadvantages compared to women. 1. Men are conscripted, women are not. 2. Men are sent to fight in wars, women are not. 3. Men retire later than women, even though due to their lower life expectancy they should have the right to retire earlier. 4. Men have almost no influence over their reproduction. For males, there is neither a pill nor abortion. They can only get the children women want them to have. 5. Men support women. Women never or only temporarily support men. 6. Men work all their lives. Women work only temporarily or not at all. 7. Even though men work all their lives and women work only temporarily or not at all, on average, men are poorer than women. 8. Men only borrow their children. Women can keep them. As men work all their lives and women do not, men are automatically robbed of their children in cases of separation, with the reasoning that they have to work. As one can see, if anything, the female position of power has only consolidated. Today, a career in the military is also open to women in many countries, but without conscription for all. Many achieved for themselves the right to practice their job for the same number of years as their male colleagues. However, the retirement age was not increased for all of us. And now, as before, it does not occur to the underprivileged to fight against this grotesque state of affairs. Only as far as the sixth point is concerned has there been a significant change. In the more entertaining spheres of work, there are more and more women who happily and willingly work and still keep their jobs despite having the children they nevertheless desire. But only a few of these women would be prepared to offer a life of comfort not only to their children, but also the children's fathers, supported by their often substantial salaries. And fewer would further be prepared, in case of a separation, to give up their home and offspring and support the next admirer with what is left of her income. Also, men would not like it. Emancipation may be fine, but to be kept by a woman is still not acceptable. Housekeeping and raising children is not worthy of a real man. Sadly, women's manipulation of men is as topical today in the UK as it was back then, but so are the measures which could be used to end it, to the benefit of both sexes. In the meantime, however, there are already a few feminists who are talking about men as human beings, so the continuation of this discussion may not have to be conducted quite so loudly. Esther Villar, August 1998.